Welcome to Inflection Point, conversations with women changing the status quo. I'm Lauren Schiller. Today on Inflection Point, Katie Goodman defines the F word.
Just take a look at the checklist. You like voting? You like driving? You're a feminist.
Today on Inflection Point, we own it with performer Katie Goodman. Do you own a conservative country club, or are you an abstinence-only textbook publisher? According to the website of our guest, performer Katie Goodman, you should definitely not book her for your next event. Katie is a comedian, musician, and author. You may have seen her viral Not Safe for Work music videos, including Sorry Babe, You're a Feminist, and another one I can't say on the radio. Here's an excerpt from the first one.
Millennial women were truly happy for you. You feel empowered, and that was the goal, it's true. So many of your rights are guaranteed today that you can't imagine things were ever any other way. I'm so glad you don't have to deal with this much crap, but to give the feminists who came before you a bad rap. I mean, dude, they even gave you your free pap. So why don't you just shut your yap? Only about this, though. Say anything you want about anything else, all your opinions, and don't let anyone tell you can't, because you're a feminist. Yeah, babe, you're a feminist. Just take a look at the checklist. You like voting? You like driving? You're a feminist. Past feminists gave their lives to let you vote and be more than wives. Saying you're not a feminist gives them hives, although they're dead and buried, so it's hard to see. You try to explain it's because you don't hate men. How do we have to go through that again and again? It's not about who's better. Here's my proof. Lots of men are feminists too, right? Where are my feminist guys at? Yeah! You want to argue that we're post-feminism? Well, tell that to American conservatism or post anything opinionated on the web without a death threat from some misogynist head. Yeah, Jesus, you're a feminist. Yeah, babe, you're a feminist. All your ideas would have been dismissed before there was a world of feminists.
Katie Goodman, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
There are so many ways people can experience Katie Goodman. You and I met on Twitter, which I love. I feel very new age of the century for that. And I saw your video, Sorry Babe, You're a Feminist, which we just played a little bit of. So let's just start with that. Tell us why you made that song.
Frustration. That's what motivates me on most things. I was reading an article that was interviewing a young feminist actress. We've seen a bunch of these with different ladies, and she was saying, "I'm not a feminist because," and then she had all these sort of, in my mind, ridiculous answers. You know, I like men. I'm not man-hating. I'm a humanist, not a, you know, I don't like labels. I mean, it just sort of would go on and on and on about being, basically the upshot was that I'm living in 2015 where there's really hard to see from whence we came and everything seems fine. And of course it also isn't. I mean, it's interesting because like Jennifer Lawrence coming out about, you know, equal pay being such a disaster in movies right now and things like that. So it's funny that people from their experience, they're having one of these two different experiences, like Emma Watson also is a big feminist. And so, you know, this younger generation is sort of either picking to be aligned with using the word or not using the word. And so anyway, my whole point of the song was like, look, it's a definition. You actually are a feminist. You know, you're being interviewed about your opinions of feminism in national media. And you expect people to listen to you. And that's a feminist act right there. So I tried to just poke fun the sort of lack of awareness.
Yeah. Well, it does a great job of that. And it is so interesting that this debate continues to rage about what is or isn't a feminist and what is the definition of that and people's anxiety about labeling and all of that. So it's fun to have a bit of a laugh about it.
Lauren, you wouldn't believe what the comments are. I mean, it's so interesting. So we put this up in April, it went viral, and then I get my notifications from comments because I'm sort of masochistic. I was going to say fascinated, but it's really just masochistic. So they come in and to my email. And at first I was reading them and it was kind of interesting. And there were some men saying some interesting things and then some completely asinine things. And then people arguing. And it eventually came down to just like two very simple arguments that I address in the song, which makes me wonder if they even actually listened to it, you know, the whole way through. And I just got so tired of it. I just stopped reading the comments. But it is interesting that this is, of all of my songs, that this is the one that got, I can't remember on Huffington Post, it was like 20,000 thumbs up and 20,000 thumbs down, which is also a huge number of opinions. Like most people, if you even go on to Jon Stewart's stuff on Huffington Post, there's not that many comments or things or likes and stuff, even though there's views. So it was just the fact that people had an opinion about this was so fascinating to me compared to, like, you know, our Tea Party song or, you know, our song called Probably Gay about homophobia and things like that. It just sparked such a reaction. And in some ways, it's a first world problem because in other countries, the, you know, Feminista Party, like the feminist party, it's a, first of all, it's a party, not like in a happy way, but like in a political party that people feel is important to use the name. And you know, those guys are worrying about like getting stoned and wife burning and things like that. And we're sort of, you know, I mean, obviously there's tremendous problems here too, but it's such a simple thing to just be like, look, if for no other reason, I want to support my sisters in other countries where that word is incredibly important.
Well, I encourage everyone to watch and listen to the entire song all the way through before commenting, even. So you've also got a video, Katie, that for radio, I will have to call I Didn't F It Up. Yes. And I want to ask you about that. But first, let's just hear a little excerpt from that one.
Get up. You probably didn't get up. But they, whoever they are, they fucked it up. Now it's fucked up. I can't unfuck it up. You probably can't unfuck it up. If we're counting on them to unfuck it up, then we're all fucked.
Okay, what is the story with that song?
Actually, it was funny. You know, when I do my show and I tour around, we do Planned Parenthood shows and theaters and colleges and things. And I needed a 45-second thing while one of my actresses was changing for another costume. And so we put this little tiny joke together. And then as we got closer to the performance of it, everybody kept saying, oh, my God, that's my favorite thing in the whole show. You need to expand that. And so, you know, we just made it a much longer sing-along. At the end, there's kind of this sing-along aspect of it, and the audience sort of loves saying those things. But I think what's been particularly interesting to me about this song is that it rallies like a lot of people because I think everybody feels like the world's messed up. And although, okay, every now and then though, Lauren, I do get people who are like, oh, she's so right. You know, Obama did mess it up. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not what the song's about. So you can kind of project onto it, you know.
Well, you do sort of insert your own biases into the song as you're listening, right?
Exactly.
It's for everyone. Katie Goodman is for everyone.
But I have had some beautiful, beautiful emails. I mean, a lot of people are like replaying it, singing it themselves at things. And I have, there's a men's group, they're actually an incest survivor group that sings it at the beginning of every single group. And it's so sweet. They're so kind. They like send me little emails, and it's really nice to, you know, as an artist, it's really frustrating because you are doing such indirect action as opposed to direct action, you know, so you're not on the ground, you know, helping people from floods or whatever. You're just hoping you sing a song and then everybody goes home and does something about it in the world. So it's kind of nice when you actually see it having an effect, which is hard to see.
Well, your videos and your songs build up this great crescendo, that song being one of them. But you also have one about drunk dialing Barack Obama, who you just mentioned. Let's play that one and then you can explain.
I'll admit I had a few drinks, but I did it. I drunk dialed Obama, I drunk dialed Obama, I drunk dialed Obama, I drunk dialed that man. Hey, it's me. I'm sorry, did I wake you? No, but you know, remember back with that anti-gay, anti-abortion pastor you had do the invocation at your inauguration? What the hell was that? Anti-gay and anti-abortion? No, I know you said you were going to be inclusive, and so you were being inclusive. But do we have to be inclusive of them? I mean, can't we just be inclusive of the people who want to be inclusive and then not be inclusive of the anti-inclusive people? I mean, don't they opt out of being included by the very nature of being anti-inclusive? And didn't you say you were going to be the champion of all minority people and viewpoints and the most liberal president the nation's ever seen? You didn't say that? Did I just make that up? Oh, sorry. Yeah, no. We'll talk later. Yeah, go back to bed. Sorry, yeah. Okay, bye.
Okay, tell us where that came from.
I actually wrote that a long time ago. Like, it's a five or six year old song now, and I don't do it as much anymore. But just because he's headed out, it's sort of like, why, you know, give him a hard time. But I think it was just one of these things where when he came into office, we wrote all these love songs, and then all of a sudden we were like, wait, what happened? You know. And of course, some of it's understandable, but some of it's frustrating because he didn't end up doing all the amazing things we were hoping for.
So you're calling him out.
Yeah, and you know, we have a new sketch that we just wrote where one of the actresses says they're voting for hope and change, and they were like, and somebody else says, "No, hope and change is not on the ballot this time." It's depressing.
That's early 21st century.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, you know, I it's a god-awful job, and I don't know that anyone's going to succeed at it for a long, long time until the Senate and the House are different, and we can't put all our eggs in that basket. But the one thing that I do think, I was just talking to somebody who's in Paris about the climate change talks and saying, you know, nothing's ever going to come, it won't make any difference, but all the political things do get the activists and citizens motivated by watching it, you know, so that's a good thing in trying to make a difference ourselves.
Do you have a climate change song?
I do. It's called It's All Gonna Be Okay, and it's a totally happy 1960s style with white go-go boots kind of song, like, it's all gonna be okay, and it's and then it lists all these horrible, horrible disasters.
Okay, another one for us to tune into.
Yeah.
Well, I think you referenced your performance group. I assume you were talking about broad comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what kind of work do you do with that, and who do you typically perform for?
Well, I have my solo show, but I also have broad comedy, and I take a lot of the material from broad comedy when I go on solo tour. But I perform lately. I guess I can say this on the air. We're calling it the Vagina Tour because we go to Planned Parenthood, and we're doing a lot of fundraisers and things like that for them, which is wonderful and feels so good and make them a lot of money. And we do some theaters, although theaters have gotten, not the audiences, but the theater owners have gotten very conservative and are sort of, they'd rather have Annie than a, you know, swearing bunch of R-rated women talking about, you know, sex positive messages. So it's been sort of interesting. We've had to produce ourselves in a lot of places, whereas we didn't used to have to do that, which is fine. The audiences are still there, but it feels depressing about the state of the country.
Well, are these the same managers or different people in the same position, or what do you think is happening?
I actually almost think it's not even the managers. It's more like the boards, which are the, I don't know, they're all different in different places, but they're afraid of what either they're what's going to happen with their grants or their, you know what I mean? There's just...
playing it safe.
Yeah, backlash all over the place. Yeah. Yeah, they're playing it safe, exactly, which is not what you're supposed to do with art.
Well, yeah. With the Planned Parenthood fundraisers, that seems like that's increasingly important with what's happening in terms of government funding. And when this airs, we'll know the outcome of it. But at the time of this recording, a bill was just passed in the Senate to defund Planned Parenthood.
Yep.
Do you cover that in your shows?
Yeah, I mean, we have quite a few small references to Planned Parenthood. I imagine pretty soon we will make them a video just to help out in what we can. But yeah, it's interesting, like, about the comedy. I don't know if you've been watching, reading The Onion at all, but they have great stuff right now about Planned Parenthood, but it's so edgy and a little bit like, oh, this is so horrible, but so funny at the same time, you know, like there was a joke that gunmen can't find Planned Parenthood, too long a drive between clinics or something like that.
Oh,
you know, and I totally get the sitting around the writer's room trying to come up with stuff because it's so on the edge. And we had one song we did a long time ago. This is even like 8 or 10 years ago, kind of a la Oklahoma, which was, oh, the pro-life and the pro-choice should be friends, you know. That song, The Cowman and the Farmer Should Be Friends. And, you know, here's all these things we disagree on, but that doesn't mean we can't be friends. But then in the end of it, it broke down where then the line was, so how come you're killing all our doctors? And it's this incredibly poignant thing. The song stops, we get into a huge brawl, and then it ends up funny again at the end. But I can't perform that at Planned Parenthood, obviously, because it's so incredibly too real and upsetting. And it's that thing, trying to find that line between what's funny and satirical and what's just like a hit to the head, you know, and this is it's tricky times.
Yeah. Well, when someone is outspoken and puts themselves out there like you do, there's always going to be some haters.
Oh, yeah.
what do you say to them, and what kind of criticism are you getting, and how do you respond?
Well, one way we respond is we write a song about it. We wrote a song last year called Don't Hit Reply, about not writing back to YouTube haters. And it's a bunch of examples of the worst things we've ever gotten. I can't even say them on the air, but really hostile. I'm sitting here trying to think of one that I can say, but I can't.
Well,
we'll have
a link to your YouTube page on Inflection Point Radio's website.
And we're going to make that one into a produced video, but we do that live right now. But that's the way that we speak back, you know, is we say, look at what's out here. And some of it you don't engage either. I mean, you know, if somebody has something to say that I think is intelligent, etc., I will occasionally write back on Facebook or YouTube or something, but so much of it is just anonymous misogyny, and then it's like, we don't really have anything to talk about, you know, so it doesn't, those don't actually get to me that much. It just makes me sad about the world, but you just keep writing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the way to fight back is to keep performing.
Yeah, well, so this, you mentioned the Tea Party parody. Another thing I can't say on the air. I ain't funding that S, we'll just say. What kind of response did you get to that one?
That one, again, I think people know what they get into when they are going to that one. So if they're going to hate it, they may just not even watch it.
Right. The title is pretty clear.
Yeah. But there's one, the one called Probably Gay is actually a really interesting sociological study if you go look at the YouTube comments. It's our homophobia song, and the setup is, if you're homophobic, you're probably gay.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all about all the legislators who are anti-gay and then get caught and things like that.
Right.
And a study that was done testing men's responses, shall we say, to straight porn versus gay porn, and how the homophobic men responded to the gay porn so much more, like 80% of the time.
Interesting.
So it's a full-on, actual real study. And so that's what the song's about. But what was really funny is people would write, in comments saying, debunking it, and then they'd say things like, well, I'm not turned on when I watch gay porn, and then someone else will be writing like, why are you watching gay porn? Like, you know, and just all kinds of fun. It's just been really interesting reading all those comments.
Wow. Switching gears a little bit here, but you wrote a great article a while back in O Magazine, Oprah's magazine, about the value of improvisation. And I thought some of the ideas that you shared there were so interesting, and I was wondering if you could recall some of the tips and reasons for improv in your life.
Yeah, so I actually teach these workshops like all over the country, and it's like people come together to try to find your authentic voice is kind of what we're trying to excavate there, and all the tools of improv comedy can be used in daily life. And I wrote a book called Improvisation for the Spirit, and it is a workbook kind of to help people go through that. And the idea is that everything from trust, self-trust, you know, listening skills, trusting your intuition, what I call gagging your inner critic or turning it into an inner coach, and just getting out of your own way, really, are things that we all need in every relationship. But I think the big one that I love seeing is when people start to, you don't have time in improv to censor yourself, so you end up being authentic by default. You know, you pull on your own stories and resources and experiences. You bring them into the scene that you're doing or the exercise. It generally works when you're unblocked like that. And then you get this sort of feedback where everyone laughs at something you've said that was really authentic and genuine. And you get real-time feedback going, oh, okay, I'm actually being appreciated for the real me. Because nobody wants to put on this face. You get all this love for the face that you put on, and then you're like, wait a minute, that doesn't mean anything because that's not actually who I am.
How do you help people get over the fear of putting themselves out there?
Well, I go a little bit slowly, but some of what happens with improv is it's not like public speaking where you're one person on the stage. You are engaged with the other people in the scene so much, and it's usually because of the comedy, it's fun. So right away, you're just sort of pulled in, and it's just happening before you know it, as opposed to, oh, my God, I have to walk out there, you know, kind of feeling, which that's much harder, I think, in some ways, like Toastmasters or something like that. So being just collaborative gets you present. It gets you kind of out of your own way automatically. You're using your right brain and left brain at the exact same time, and you are just drawing on things you already have as opposed to something you have to learn. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well, you have a collaborator. You have an in-home collaborator, don't you? You work
with
your husband.
I like that term. That's hilarious. I've never used that. In-house. Yes. My husband and I met in a show. I mean, I was an actress before. I was a comedian for a long time, and he and I owned a 99-seat theater, and he's a playwright, too. And we co-write broad comedy and all my stuff, and then he co-directs with me as well. So it's nice. And it's nice having a male feminist in-house collaborator too.
Well, how does that work with the combining the professional and the personal?
I have a 95-year-old aunt who worked with her husband for 50 years, and her line that I love was, I've never considered divorce homicide, but not divorce. So I think,
okay.
You know, most days we get along great. And we pass things back and forth a lot. I mean, every single piece we write is different. There have been some pieces where we literally sat down together in front of a computer and, you know, just done it at the same time. And then a lot of times he has an idea, he'll hum something random into my phone. He's not a musician, but he's very musical, but it's hilarious. He's always like, something like this, ding, 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 you know, and then he'll say, and then I'll be like, okay, I kind of know what you're talking about. And then I'll go to the piano at the studio and I'll work on it for a while and I'll record something and send it back to him with the whole structure set out. And he's like, okay, good, this is kind of the right. And then he'll continue writing some words. And then I'll write some words. So every single piece is different. We also write a lot of sketch. And we just wrote a children's book together, actually, which is almost like an improv game in the story of it. It's these two. It's called The Night Our Parents Went Out. And these two kids are saying all the things they're worried about happening to their parents, but they're all silly things, like they go to a movie and there's vampires there and, you know, stuff like that. And the babysitter tells them how the parents would MacGyver their way out of it. So it's kind of like a yes and sort of a structure where the babysitter is not saying, no, your fears are stupid. She's saying, well, no, here's what would happen next. And so we kind of pulled from all of our improv experience to write that story. But the experience of writing the storybook was also, an improv experience as well. And the night our parents went out is about those fears, which Soren and I actually don't have, and our kid doesn't have. So when we heard a friend talking about their kid being afraid, it kind of struck us, whereas with somebody who it's normal, they would never think to write about it. But we were like, wait, that's interesting. And so we wrote that together, and then we collaborated with an artist we actually never met until it was done, which was a bizarre collaborative experience. But our publishers, I think, didn't want us micromanaging her.
That's great. So where could people get their hands on the book?
Oh, it's on everywhere. Amazon, bookstores, Barnes & Noble, but local bookstores, I always encourage.
All right. The night our parents went out. Mm-hmm. I still need to read that, I think, for myself.
It's a quick read.
I'm a worrier sometimes.
Are you? Well, see, yeah, that's the thing. It's like people either are or are not, we have found. You know, it's not in between. It's interesting.
So what is the best advice, Katie, that you've ever received about performing in front of a live audience?
Well, there's two very different things I'm doing. One is as an actor, where you are pretending the audience is not there. So the deal is to just stay connected to the other person on stage with you, and that's like your whole job. Then the opposite, when you're a stand-up comic, is you're talking directly to the audience, which I actually find much harder. And I don't think I've ever been given any good advice about that, actually, now that I think about it. But, you know, they're just such different animals. Comics and actors are such different people, and I'm much more of an actor, which is collaborative, and it's been much more of a challenge for me to just do a whole show in front of other people. But I think my husband, actually, whenever I'm a little nervous, if I have, like, a big show, like I was on Showtime and a couple other things, and I was really having a little bit of nerves, he's always like, just have fun. You know, he's like, they're here to have fun. Just have fun and be playful.
That's
and relax.
Great. That's
and
great.
And it's an easy, simple thing to remember in the middle, you know?
Yeah, it's only three letters.
Exactly.
Starts with an F. Well, Katie Goodman, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. This was fun.
That was comedian and actress Katie Goodman. That's our inflection point for today. Is there a woman changing the status quo you'd like to hear from? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. And while you're there, I invite you to become a patron of Inflection Point, just like Paige Steinman, Teresa, and Ann Harris, who are helping bring the voices and views of powerful women to the ears of everyone. And you can too at inflectionpointradio.org. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco and delivered to public radio stations nationwide through PRX. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.